Yeah. Okay, so I sat down.
That's because they were both from my house.
Because I was excited. But I'm gonna just explain what we're about to do, what the plan is for tonight. So Rabbi Berg is going to very briefly share with us a little bit about the concept of this. Just give a little bit of a hakdama so that we could be in the right headspace, the right frame of mind to really delve into this. After that, we're going to have a Berg panel. This is the very first time we've ever done that, am I right?
Ooh.
Yeah, wow, okay, and hopefully not the last. So come up with good questions. Please make it worth their while so they do it again. And we're going to have a little panel with the Bergs and hear from both sides just about a little bit about dignity and about just the whole concept of dif. And we're going to open the floor to you guys. So as Rabbi Berg speaks, please try to start thinking what you'd like to ask, what you'd like to share, what you'd like to bring up. After that, I hope to still be around for it. I'm not feeling like I may leave, but if I'm still around, I really, really hope to do this with you. I would love to go around a little bit, just hear what your experience was like before we part ways. So, gotcha.
I don't know how many years we've been doing this. It's a long time already. How many years have we been doing this?
Not so long. I think it's the third or fourth.
Third or fourth year? It's a big source to be a part of this. I'll just share with you that I was in America, so I met with one of the Tomer Devora alumni, a person who's a wonderful person who's going through certain things in her life, certain religious struggles that she's having. But one thing she said is she would never behave in a way that's undignified. Whatever religious struggles she's having, but one thing she took away from Tomer Devora that she says, I don't think I can ever lose, and she definitely said, it's at least in part because of this, is a certain sense of dignity. So I think this is, again, it's a very chash of a program. It's been a number of years. It's a privilege to be part of it, I guess, even at the end. But kol hakavod to you for doing this. The Maral says that Sfiras HaOmer, the 49 days of Sfiras HaOmer, are divided up into two parts. First 32 days of the Omer, and the last 18 days of the Omer. It's 49. The first 32 days of the Omer are Begematria Kavod. The last 18 days of the Omer, the second half of the Omer, is Begematria Chai. So the question is, what's the relationship between Kavod and Chai? Between dignity and life? So earlier this year, those of you who are in Ravitzin Berg's shir, and I believe that I made mention of this concept as well, we spoke about the difference between existence and life. Existence is anything that exists, anything that's measurable, anything that you could touch. That's existence. Existence takes up space. Every single thing that exists has a life. The life is what that existence gives to the world. So the existence of a fire would be how much space the fire takes up. The life of the fire would be the warmth, the heat, the light that it generates. So when we think about kavod and chai, it's appropriate to think about that as existence and life. Kavod is existence. And the word kavod means weight, kaved, means heavy. It's the space that something takes up. Which means that in order for something to take on a particular property, to be able to say, this is what it gives to the world, there has to be a baseline that it exists. And that's really what the yesod of kavod is. Kavod means, this is real. This exists. It takes up space. It's important. It has a chashivas. So you have to contend with it. For many people in this world, it's hard for them to give anything in this world. It's hard for them to have chayim because they believe themselves to be garbage. When you speak to people, you'll see this inner negative belief that people have. It's apparent. It's apparent in the way, and everyone has it on some level. But we treat ourselves, for various reasons, we may treat ourselves as less than worthy. We have, on some level, a sense of shame. Not the healthy shame of, let's say, guilt or regret, but the belief that I'm unworthy of love and connection. In other words, it's a failure in my existence. And so when you see people that they're not able to have chayim, they're not able to have a life, they're not able to give anything, it's because when you look on the inside, when you go back to the foundation, it's what am I? What's my value? What's my worth? There has to be a baseline sense of self-esteem before a person can go out into the world and do something. Otherwise, they say things like, well, who am I to do this? And it's really the opposite. Who are you not to do this? Who are you to hold back the God-given talents that you have, that you're meant to share with the world? What? Who are you to hold those talents back? And so it sometimes feels like it's humble to withhold yourself, and that's not true. The most humble people are people that can put themselves out there in fantastic ways, but with no sense of anochius, with no sense of like, look at me. It's just like a natural byproduct of who they are. And it only happens if there's a baseline sense of kavod, that I'm worthy of being in this world to do something that's out there. Many years ago, I heard from Moshe Weinberger. He said, people don't wake up in the morning because they have nothing to wake up for. That's why nobody misses a flight. The same girl that can't wake up in the morning, she's like, it's just so hard. If she has a 6 o'clock in the morning flight and she needs to be in LaGuardia Airport at 4 o'clock in the morning, which means getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning, somehow she's able to do it. What's the pshat? If you have something to wake up for, there's something worthy. So then I do it. Rav Kook said, in Yom Kippur Davening, we say, Ad shelo notzarti eini kedai, v'achshav shelo notzarti ki ilu lo notzarti. Until I was created, it wasn't worthwhile for me to be created, and now that I'm created, it's still not worthwhile for me to be created. It seems like a very depressing thing to say. But Rav Kook said no. He said, Ad shelo notzarti eini kedai. Until this period of your life, until you were born, it wasn't worth it for you to be here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't need you in the world. V'achshav shelo notzarti, and now you were born, meaning you have a reason to be here. The Eini Kedai, and we're not saying our line. We're on stage and we're just mute. And so many of us are like that. Kavod gives life to Chaim. Existence is important. How we hold ourselves is what gives rise to our capacity to share ourselves with one another. That's not a small thing. That's why the Talmidim of Rav Akiva were Shalom Nagu Kavod. What does it mean they were not Mechabed one another? I'm sure that the Talmidim of Rav Akiva, when they were sitting in Beis Medrash with their Chavrusa, I'm sure, these were Tanaim, I'm sure that when their Chavrusa offered a Svara, and they said a Pshat, I'm sure that they listened very carefully. I'm sure they did. I'm sure they were not screaming and yelling and doing nasty things. These were Tzadikim. Otherwise they wouldn't have been punished on such a level. So what were they doing? Where was the Shalom Nahu Kavod Zevzeh? They said a good thing, Beseder. But did they really, deeply, like, appreciate the other person? Did they say, like, ah, you're here, you're a part of the puzzle, and without you, the puzzle is incomplete? That's what they were lacking. Shalom Nagu Kavod Zevzeh doesn't mean that they were yelling and screaming at each other. It's when they encountered one another, did they appreciate that sense of kvedos, the gravitas of, I'm with a human being, I'm with another person. That's why the Gemara says that there were 12,000 pairs. I heard my wife say one time, more than one time, it's easy to be happy when you don't have to be differentiated. When you're just one person by yourself doing whatever you want, it's easy to be happy. But to be able to maintain your own sense of self when you're in a zug, when you're in a couple, right, to be able to negotiate that narrow terrain, it's not simple at all. And still, to hold your own, right, and to be for yourself, and to be a happy person within that narrow shetach of two people living together, that's not a simple thing. To be differentiated when you're in a relationship, that's very, very difficult. It requires a deep sense of dignity for yourself and a deep sense of dignity for the other. Right, to be firmly planted on your side of the aisle, to say, this is who I am, and to have a deep respect for who the other person is and the weight that they bring to the world, and understanding that without either one of those things, the picture is incomplete. It's always appropriate that we have this challenge at this time of the year, because as you're finishing your Shana Aleph, for those of you who are coming back Shana Bet, for those of you who are not coming Shana Bet, it doesn't matter. as you're finishing your Shana Aleph and you're about to go into the world, and soon there's going to be a big sense of chayim in your life. Whether that's going to be the profession that you choose, the dating, the marriage, the children, the community, chayim is right here. Real life. You know, it's okay to say that seminary is a bubble. It is. It doesn't mean it's a bad thing. There are awesome things that are a bubble. This is a great bubble. I hope that you'll give your children the same opportunity. But it is a bubble. It's a bubble because you don't yet have the... What's the right word? You don't have the burden. And I mean it that way on purpose. You don't have the burden of life. Life takes a real toll on you. There's a lot of things that are going to come your way that you're never going to see coming. And you're going to self-actualize, right? It's going, now it's like real. It's like, okay, I'm going to college. I'm becoming that speech therapist, physical therapist, occupational therapist, horse therapist, music therapist, water therapist. It used to just be called swimming. Now it's water therapy. I'm in chinuch therapist. You know, it's like the, always. The foundation of what you had here this year was a sense of kavod. Chaim is what's coming. Kavod is what you've got. I think that's a very unique thing about Torah Devarah. I think you could have gone to any seminary in the world to learn Torah. There's no doubt that there's that every seminary in Yerushalayim, Eretz Kodesh, and beyond, every one of them teaches amazing Torah, no doubt. But there are very few seminaries that teach you about you. That's a much harder thing to learn. Where the classes, the shiurim, the people are real, trying to give you a sense of who you are, not trying to foster our own vision for who you are on yourselves, but asking yourselves the opposite question. Who are you? And then bringing that into the world. I believe that that's a good introduction. I know Mrs. Trent has a couple of questions she's going to ask us to start, but I believe that's a good introduction. As we finish this year, a sense of cover, a sense of dignity, a sense of self, and from that comes the giving into the world.
Okay. So the first question was actually answered very beautifully just now. Luckily we have two birds. Not only that, but I'm sure that there are more practical aspects that may be worth bringing up. I'm stalling as I'm looking for the question. Okay, so the first question was, how would you define dignity? I think that, by the way, just as a behind the scenes pattern, and I told you guys this when we announced the Diff Challenge, every year the first few days of the Diff Challenge are a little bit chaotic because the chat is full of Diff moments that are not directly related to Diff. This year we didn't have it so much, actually. I'm pretty impressed with this group, right? We didn't have it so much. But other years there are a lot of moments of, I helped an old lady cross the street. Is that a Diff moment? I benched with Kavana. Is that a Diff moment? Now, I would say that while those things are not necessarily directly, a definition of Diff, they're a byproduct of being Diff, right? A person who exudes dignity will most likely find themselves drawn to these other values as well. But if we had to narrow it down and really define, how would you define dignity?
I'm not good with definitions, but I would say, you know, having a strong sense of self, a strong sense of who you are, and but dignity says, like, a lot of things that Rabbi Berg said about, like, you know, you're knowing your own worthiness, and also knowing who you are and knowing that you're worthy. Standing in that knowledge, and having a sense of, like, this is worthy of me. Like, I wouldn't do that because that's beneath my dignity. That's something that I wouldn't do because that's not who I am. And that's not who I want to be in this world. And just having like a strong idea of, you know, who I am and who I want to be in this world and how I hold myself in all, you know, in speech and dress and action. And it's just like a kind of like an aura that a person would just like, would kind of emanate from just a strong knowledge who they are.
I think just as I was listening to Michael Sandberg speak, the thing that was coming up for me as I was listening to it was, that's actually what my daughters have seen in our home. Because whether Mrs. Berg likes to define things or doesn't like to define things, she certainly embodies this. And there's a sense in our home that our daughters see and say, Ema would never do that. I like that. It wouldn't occur. There's like a baseline, right? It's like, I would never do that because, like, I couldn't bring myself to do it. And it's not necessarily a conscious awareness of what you're doing, right? It's just like it is, right? Like, there are certain things, like, I'll give you an example. I get this question a lot in the coming weeks. I'm going to get this question a lot. All the guys that are going to work in HASC are going to express their concerns about their capacity to be good counselors. And I'm speaking in a dignified fashion, so I'm wondering if you girls understand what I'm talking about. I'm speaking, listen carefully to what I'm about to say, balashon naki. I'm speaking in a clean fashion. Sometimes there are messes that need to be cleaned up, and it can be difficult for a guy who grew up in the Five Towns, who's never done that before for anybody, not his siblings, not even themselves, right? And now they're going to have to do it for another person, and it's like a terrifying thing. Can I do that? Well, why is that like so hard? Because like, that's so beneath my dignity, and reformatting and saying like, no, in this case it's the chesed, it's not beneath my dignity. That's a hard shift. But what we will do and what we won't do is not a definition. It's not like it's not an intellectual knowledge. It's not even a choice that you have to make. It's a baseline of who you are. And I think the word that Rebitzenberg used was a good one. It's an aura. Right? This is not a concept. It's a belief system that's so deeply embedded in yourself that you project it when you go out into the world. And people will know, just like you know about others, right? You know there are people that are of such dignity that you would never speak to them in a certain fashion. You would never treat them in a certain fashion. And they never had to tell you with their words that I don't behave that way. Because it just wouldn't occur to you to speak to that way, or you know, speak that way around them, or to act that way around them. Because their dignity is so deeply planted in who they are that it's like, it surrounds them like an aura. That was a really powerful word.
The next question is the $1 million question. And it really is kind of the reason why we're here today, because I think we're all on this constant quest to answer the following question. And that is, how do you achieve dignity? How do you grow in dignity? What are the steps? What are the practical ways? What I find most humbling about watching you guys go through the DIF challenge, and every year it takes a little bit of a different form, and every year it's a different student body, so the DIF moments are different, and the DIF victories and the DIF struggles are different, not only within the DIF challenge, but even just through everyday life. But what I find most humbling is the realization that it never ends. That it doesn't stop when you board the plane and go back to America at the end of the year. And it's not going to stop when you have a shekel to hide behind or a ring to, you know, to flaunt. And it doesn't end when you're, 85 and in a wheelchair. You're constantly, constantly on this escalator, you know, going up on this downhill escalator of growth in this area. And how do we get there? What are the practical steps?
I have a hard time separating between God and self. I think it's a very fine line of where God ends and self begins. Which is not to say that we're God, of course. But the notion of consciousness, like, how am I, what is consciousness? We can't point to consciousness in the brain. Do you know that? We have no idea where consciousness is. if you ask any neurologist in the world, point to the part of your brain that gives you a sense of self, that gives you an independent sense of self. You couldn't point to such a part. It doesn't exist. We don't know where it is, if it's there at all. And my understanding is that consciousness is, when we speak about consciousness, we're speaking about the God-given ability to be in self. And so, for me, just as a person, I can't separate between those two things. And I don't think that we could talk about building a healthy sense of self, and therefore a dignified sense of self, without talking about the fact that I am a creation of Hashem. I don't think that you can do that. So, for me, I think that dignity is born from the belief that I was created by Ribbono Shel Olam for a particular purpose, for a particular mission, for a particular amount of time. And it's not forever. And so, what gives dignity to a person is the awareness that I am not an independent entity. And not only does that give, let's say, a personal dignity to ourselves, but it also obligates us to give dignity to every single person. So if you look at the Mishnah Avos, it says, Ovem is abrios umekarvon latara. So the Alter Rebbe is medayek. What does it mean, Ovem is abrios? That we should love creations. It should have said, Ovem is anashim, love people. Why did it say, Ovem is abrios? So the Alter Rebbe said, the Mishnah is referring to the lowest level creatures. It's referring to people that are barely human. You see people like, anyone here from Los Angeles? Where?
Valley,
Arizona. You ever been to the city?
Yes.
You ever walk like on certain sections of Pico?
Yeah.
And you see like homeless people, it's like on the street. In the valley also? I try to stay away from the valley. City's cooler. But it's an amazing thing. I'm from the five towns. We didn't see homeless people growing up. And so it's like you're walking and there's a part of you, I don't know if you've ever had this, at least for me, you ever try to walk by homeless people and almost pretend that they don't exist? It's totally not nice. I do it. I'm not serious. It's just not a nice thing. Those are human beings. And the biggest tzaddik in the world, right, because he has such a deep appreciation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, would recognize the godliness in that person that has fallen to such a low state. And they would cry out in such pain for such a person. And not only people who are, let's say, homeless, but people who are struggling, people who are mamsh acting in a very low way. The bigger the tzaddik, the more understanding of dignity the tzaddik has, because he's so connected to their banishlam, which is the source of all dignity. You were created on purpose for a reason, for a particular amount of time. And then memela, even in the lowest person in the world, I'm going to find dignity. And I think that, just to be very precise about the answer, like with everything, it can come one of two ways. You could either develop dignity from the consciousness that you're aware of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and you're created on purpose, or the opposite, and I think this is maybe the diff challenge, you could act your way into good thinking. You ever hear that phrase? Sometimes you can't think your way into good acting, you have to act your way into good thinking. So you said before, I didn't know that I was going to be able to do this, but you start developing a habit of dignity. And what happens if you start developing that habit? You start to become aware of your own dignity. And that also can be a very powerful way of building up dignity.
When I heard the question, so I was thinking about, actually it ended up being more similar on the lines to, there's always the inside-out approach and there's the outside-in approach. So I always like the inside-out approach, but I think in this question there's a lot of value to both. And the inside-out approach for sure connects with what Berg was saying, and it's what we speak about a lot in that Atzmacha, is that it's just this, it's this knowledge of this deep sense of self, of who we are. And the more we focus on that aspect of ourselves, and the more we know who we are, and the more we know that that aspect of ourselves is what's godly, it's what's connected to Hashem, it's our the aspect of, you know, that makes us worthy, and it's the place of goodness and of connection and of joy like that. And the more we think about and focus on that part of ourselves that connects us to Hashem, like it just. That automatically grows. Like we're noticing it, and we're focusing on it. We're cultivating that aspect of ourselves because that's really our godly self. Also, when we're also on the inside-out approach, is that, you know, if we are really worthy, right? If we really want to cultivate this idea of our own dignity and our own worthiness, then we have to treat ourselves like we are, right? We have to. If you're a person who's worthy, then you're worthy of, you know, taking care of yourself, eating well, sleeping well, being kind to yourself, being accepting of yourself, being gentle with yourself, not saying mean things to yourself. All of these things, like I think that's actually a way we cultivate it from the inside, is really knowing, like, if I'm a worthy person, then I treat myself well. And when I treat myself well, then that I'm going to grow, like, my, again, that aura, that when I treat myself well and I know who I am, then that will kind of, you know, automatically, like, permeate outward. I think also the very important on this topic in specific is the outside-in approach. Because I think we are very much affected by how we dress, how we speak, how we comport ourselves, how we are in the world. And we definitely have something in our home. We definitely talk about this. Like, there's a mechubad way to speak. There's a dignified way to speak. There's a dignified way to sit. There's a dignified way to act. There's a dignified way of being in the streets. And I think when we do those actions, and people have really even said, like, when they choose to, like, dress in a certain way, it definitely makes an impression on themselves, on their behavior. When you dress a certain way, you're not going to behave a certain, you know, do things that are beneath the dignity of a person who dresses that way. And even, you know, it, like, if you go to work, you wear a certain clothing, and if you're just lounging around at home, you wear different clothing. Like, when we're in, you know, our uniform, or we're in, you know, clothing that's more elevated, I don't mean to be focusing on clothing, I'm just talking about, like, something that has an influence on ourselves. But I think it's not just that. It's I speak in a certain way because I know that I'm a certain type of person. I act in a certain way because I know that I'm that type of person. And when I behave in those ways, it helps me remember who I really am. I think it goes both ways. I think it's from inside out and outside in this case.
Just a quick sub question on that same question. Would that be intuitive to know what behaving in a dignified way is, or is there any way to pick that up consciously? How do one know what it looks like to be dignified? If you're trying to take the outside in approach, how would you even know what you're aiming for?
I think having good models is very helpful. You look around and you see people and you get a sense of, like, you know, you kind of, like, get an idea. You say, that person, you know, is behaves in a really dignified way. Let me, like, get an idea about what they're doing, or, like, you know, see how they're behaving, or what they're, you know, I know that could be, or you can, you know, could speak to them about that. Is it intuitive? It's very interesting. I'm thinking about it because I really grew up with that idea. I grew up with this in my. I'm grateful that I'm having the opportunity to speak here, because this is an idea that I really grew up with in my family. It was very important to my father in specific, Hillel Shalom, and it was you carry yourself in a certain way. You know, he actually almost always wore a suit, as far as I remember. He always was wearing a suit, usually with a tie. And it was just like, you know, it was always like, you know, I remember if we ever went out to a restaurant, we'd all have to get dressed up. It wasn't like a regular, and it was like, you get dressed up, you dress in chubad. He never let my brothers wear jeans. My brothers did not wear jeans. It was just like, that's not how we behave. That's not, so I really kind of grew up that way, and I really kind of, like, I mean, to this day, I almost never take off my shoes, ever, like, until I go to sleep. It's just a thing. It's just, we walk around, you know, again, I'm just trying to think, like, for me, it was so in my, and again, that's why it's part of our home culture, is that, you know, is this a dignified way to speak? Is this a dignified way to be? Is that a dignified way to sit? I'm not sure if that's,
that's perfect.
You know, it's something that we talk about and we speak, you know, you're a mechubad person. How does a mechubad person behave?
I do think it's actually intuitive. I do think that the chelik alakami mal that we have from HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what dignity is, and if we listen to that inner godly voice, it will tell us, is this dignified or not? But this is a load bearing transition here. We live in a society that has lost almost every shred of dignity. I can't say every shred, but certainly almost every shred. I never talk about politics, and the purpose of what I'm about to say is not to talk about politics. But when we were talking, let's say, about the previous president of the United States, so people said, like, okay, yeah, he's an animal, but, you know, like, I like his policies. Slow down. What happens when you put somebody in front of an entire nation in perhaps the most dignified position in the country, and he talks like an animal, and he walks like an animal, and he behaves like an animal, and everything is like a fight or a nasty comment, that permeates in society and becomes a part of the way that we are. And it's definitely been, since the 60s, it's definitely been like a slow roll, but it's definitely a roll, and we're moving in a very, very interesting direction. And like it used to be, when a person went to work, they dressed in a suit and tie, and or maybe they had this thing called casual Fridays. And now there's no casual Fridays, there's casual every day, and we don't even go into the office anymore. And it's like, cameras off on Zoom, so God knows what they're wearing, you know, if anything, on the other side of Zoom. And the way that we speak, and even the things that are on television, right? It's a very, very different world than it was even 20, 30 years ago. Rav Moshe Feinstein predicted this. Rav Moshe said, in the times of the 80s, Rav Moshe said that television was aser. And people got very upset at Rav Moshe when he said that, because the most controversial thing on television at the time was the Brady Bunch showed the mom and dad in bed in the bedroom together. They weren't doing anything, they were just sitting in the same bed. And it was so taboo, it was like, whoa, they're in the bedroom together and you saw them in bed. And people were like, this is the breakdown of society. And like, I don't know what Rav Moshe would have thought if he knew that there was, let's say, a show about Games and Thrones and different, like, different dragons and all sorts of... No, Rabbi, I watch it for the story. Sure you do. We did lose a sense of dignity, and to tap into the innate dignity is very, very, very difficult today. Because when we speak about this, it's always going to be about sensitivities, right? The difference between undignified and dignified is very small brushstrokes. They tell a story about Shlomo Freifeld, the Chatzalik Bracha, that Freifeld went over to a bacher who was davening with his one leg crossed over the other. And he put his arm around his shoulder and he said, the Mona Lisa is the most beautiful painting because every brushstroke is perfect. And that's not the way we sit during davening. I remember I had a Rebbe in sixth grade, his name was Rebbe Glenn. And I was davening with my hands in my pockets. And in a very kind way, he came over to me and said, do me a favor, daven with your hands in your pockets. And even today, I'm 41 years old, if I ever slip to put my hands in my pockets, I hear Rabbi Glenn say, do me a favor, take your hands out of your pockets. So I'm always doing Rabbi Glenn a favor, because my hands always somehow end up in my pockets. And it's like, there's a dignity to it. Is it? Can I tell you exactly what it is, why it's undignified to have your hands in your pockets during davening? I can't really. It's just a small brushstroke. Now, I saw it with my Rebbe. My Rebbe is now he's 94 years old, but when he was my Rebbe and he was in his late 70s and his early 80s, so he had tremendous dignity. And he would walk into the Beis Medrash, he was quite tall, he would walk into the Beis Medrash, standing very straight, and he would survey the territory. It was like a melech just walked into the room, and he would look around, and he would like look at, and his presence was felt in the Beis Medrash. And like at 11 o'clock every day, when he walked in, it was like, Rebbe's here. I can't tell you what it was exactly, but he stood with a certain majesty, something that I don't think we see today from our leaders, certainly in the secular world. And something that unfortunately has pervaded our society.
Wow. Just a small personal story that relates to the points that both of you brought up. I don't know why this came to me, but I just feel like I want to share. When I was in Shana Gimel Dalenhe, I don't know at what point in my seminary career, I was very, very close with a certain family in Har Nov, who are the picture of kavod, and when I say kavod, I mean to themselves, to others, to concepts, to ideas, to values. And me and their daughter, who were good friends, sat on the couch one night and we were schmoozing, and it was must have been, I don't know, 1 o'clock in the morning, and her father, Rabbi Raff, that's who it was, came out of his room, basically in pajamas, put his hat and jacket on. And my friend was like, Abba, where are you going? It's 1 o'clock in the morning. And he said, oh, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to call Bubby. He was calling his mother.
put on his hat and jacket. And nobody was around. He didn't even realize we were around, clearly. And this was an action done solely for an external expression of something pnimi that he was experiencing. And I think that was Mamasha a picture of a moment where I understood kavod. The next question is a little controversial, and it's very 2022. So before I say the question, I'll just tell you that, as I may have shared with you, before I joined Torah Devorah, I worked for a Kira program for many years. And any time the topic that I'm about to touch upon came up, the type of questions that we would get would typically go along the lines of, why do we have to blah, blah, blah as women? Why do men get to blah, blah, blah? Why do we have all these halachos about tznius? Why do men get to learn Gemara? Now, do you hear the distinction in the way the question is phrased? Right? There was always this like undercurrent of whatever we as women have in terms of chiyuvim, in terms of responsibilities, in terms of opportunities, that's a burden. And whatever men have in terms of opportunities, or, and I definitely want to choose opportunities and not obligations, is somehow a privilege. So my question, as controversial as it may end up getting, I don't know, maybe not, is what makes dignity something that, I'm trying to think how I should phrase this question delicately, something that is somehow more relevant to women in terms of halachic, get what I'm saying?
I think when you sent me some questions about, is it different for man and woman?
Yes.
So, I guess, you know, when I saw that, and I said, well, I don't think the word dignity, we're not talking about sneas here, we're talking about dignity. So I don't think that dignity would be different for men and women. If you guys are, I don't know how, you know, the big challenge went, but, you know, if you're saying, are there different halachos of tznius for men and women? Yes, there are. Do men have halachos of tznius? Yes, they do. But dignity, I don't think, is different for men and women. I think even in many ways, for women, there is, you know, I've shared with people who are in my classes, like, I do a lot of study around, you know, I also share a lot of my classes about, like, femininity and masculinity and, like, the different aspects. And women have a real innate dignity, meaning there's a very deep place. You know, there's actually, in some ways, it's somewhat easier for us because we're more internal. Right? And walking, you know, carrying ourselves with this, you know, sense of who I am inside is so important that I'm not going to flaunt it all outside is something that is almost more natural for us. I think, you know, a good definition that I think even of tznius is that whatever's on the outside has to be less than whatever's on the inside. Meaning, my outside can't be like, okay, what you see is what you get. And it's actually very interesting because in the Torah and in the Nevi'im, like, a lot of people of tznius are not necessarily women, they're men. It's Shaul HaMelech was one of the great people who is known as the most tzanua, and it's actually very interesting. This is a great story that I like to share from Navi, that when David HaMelech was when David HaMelech was dancing before the Aron Kodesh, when it was brought back to Eretz Yisrael, so he was dancing with all his heart, and at some point, like the cloak, his cloak went up a little bit. And when he came back home, his wife, who was Michal, who was the daughter of Shaul HaMelech, said to him very strong words. He said, "Ma nechbar hayom Melech Yisrael?" Like, how did you behave so, you know, honorable in almost a sarcastic way? And he was saying, my father was so dignified, my father was so tzanua, and there you were dancing in front of the Aron in such an open way. Like, how is that dignified? And he answered her back very strong. I don't remember the exact words in the thing. He said, what you think
that was not mechubad. First of all, I was dancing before Hashem. I was dancing with Kabbalah before Hashem. But he said, you're thinking that whatever I dance outward was as deep as it is inside. But what I have inside is much, much, much deeper than what anybody else saw. So I think an important thing about dignity, and I think this applies to men and to women, is you never want to be that, like, whatever you see is what you get. Right? You want to be covered up enough. You want to be dressed in a certain way, speaking in a certain way, acting in a certain way, that it doesn't say, like, this is what I am. It says, I'm a person, and if you want to get to know me, I'd love to have a conversation with you. You know, my mind, my soul, my essence is so much more than what you see on here, out here. You would never want to be that anybody would think that whatever is seen on the outside is what's really on the inside. So I think that's much more the essence of what tznius and what dignity is that your internal self should always be more, you know, deeper than whatever it is that's going on and that's being shown to the world.
I don't really have much to add, but I'll just tell you a cool story. There's a coach in the NBA, who's not currently a coach in the NBA, but a coach in the NBA, his name is Stan Van Gundy. Anyone hear of Stan Van Gundy? He had a brother, Jeff Van Gundy, who was the coach of the Knicks many years ago from when we used to not know about these things. So, what was that? I heard from others that one time maybe he tried to tackle Alonzo Mourning. I'm not saying, I'm just saying, if you know what I'm saying. What was that? Who's Alonzo Mourning? He lives in Englewood, near a friend of mine, actually. Anyway, Stan Van Gundy, pretty ridiculously, went on social media and said, tell me how you could believe in the Old Testament, and the Old Testament is so sexist. Which is a weird thing for an NBA coach to be, like, posting on Twitter. Like, mein Schmidt, that's Asina. So, of course, all the Yidden piped up. And so the Reformed Jews were like, that's like, you know, old Judaism. You should, like, come to Reform Judaism. Everything is totally equal. And Stan Van Gundy goes, yeah, but you're just ignoring the Torah. And it was like, Stan Van Gundy was calling out Reform Jews for being Reform Jews. It was amazing. So, there's an interesting halacha in the Rambam. The Rambam says that a king is not allowed to be cross-examined. If the king saw a crime being committed, and he wanted to testify, he couldn't testify because he's not allowed to be cross-examined. Why is the king not allowed to be cross-examined? It's undignified. You ever see, I'm sure you did. Have you ever heard of this movie, A Few Good Men, You Can't Handle the Truth? You ever hear this? It's a famous scene in the movies, right, where he's being cross-examined and he's really, like, coming after him. And he goes, I want the truth. You can't handle the truth. And it's undignified to be on the witness stand. And in that very same halacha, the Rambam says that a woman is also not allowed to testify for the very same reason, because it would be undignified for her to be cross-examined. There is no halacha like that about men. Which says, and this is not something that we should be embarrassed about, I don't think it's controversial, men and women are different. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. Today we've blurred the lines on everything. And again, I don't like these like sort of conversations, these comments, but I'm sure many of you know that Roe v. Wade is being abolished in America. And it's a big hack. And somebody on social media said, women should be entitled to choose. And Ben Shapiro posted and he said, okay, so we acknowledge that they're women. Right? Like, it's a baseline. Okay, we get, like, okay, that's a man, that's a woman. Let's start off with that, right? Men do not have the right to choose. So, I don't think we have to be embarrassed. In the Torah, we believe very deeply that there's such a thing called masculinity and femininity. And it's a clear halacha in the Rambam. Women have a more natural, innate dignity than men. I mean, just look around you. You've not seen men? These are not exactly the most dignified creatures. Most of them are like growling at each other. You know, it's not like it takes time for my half of the species to evolve to be normal. It's a different thing. So there's a halacha, for example, women don't go to fight in battles. That's a masculine thing to do. It would not be a dignified thing to do for a woman to go fight in a war. It doesn't mean that men are less. It doesn't mean that women are better. That's certainly true that there is a more innate dignity. And the halacha always reflects the reality. The halacha is not a commandment that tells us what to do. The halacha is the revelation of what is. And the halacha is clear. there are more hilchos snias for women than for men. That's not a, and it's not to suggest that it's not hard. Of course it's hard. Of course it's hard. But it's a revelation of the reality that there's a certain innate dignity that deserves to be protected and cultivated. And to be honest with you, it's something you should be proud of. And by the way, if you're asking the question, how come the guys get to learn Gemara and not the girls? I can introduce you to many guys that would be happy to trade. don't think the grass is greener.
Wow. Okay, we're going to ask one last question, and then if anybody here has any questions that we can touch upon briefly. And the last question is, and I guess this would be a very good segue into the girls sharing their experiences or asking questions. What would you say are the challenges that that we're faced with in this area? There's a beautiful quote, we spoke about this in my class, so you probably weren't listening, but that's okay, from The Art of War. Let's see if anyone remembers. If you know yourself and you know the enemy, just ring a bell at all. Okay, great. So there's a whole beautiful long quote that discusses basically knowing what you're up against, right? Thank you for that nod. I feel better. Knowing what you're up against, knowing what the pitfalls are, knowing what the challenges are, where are we tested in this area? So what would you say we should be kind of focused on?
So when you said what are the challenges in this area, so I was thinking when you asked before, like, how to cultivate dignity, so I said you should have good models. And then shortly after, my husband said, how the world is a very very bad models. anything, I mean, I'm not very involved at all. I'm not on any social media, anything like that. And I don't Instagram, Twitter, I don't do any of that stuff. But I think, you know, he was speaking about the president, the old president, you know, this world, people are not very dignified. You know, if I think the more we're connected to when we're connected to people, how people are speaking, how people are behaving, the more we are like watching that, the more we're imbibing that, the less sensitive that we become. And that's the thing. You also mentioned something about sensitivity. Like, sensitivity is something very delicate. It's something really important to hold on to. And when we kind of lose it, it's hard. It's hard to regain. So the more we're, you know, as I said, like when we have good models, and we have people in our world that we see act dignified and speak in a dignified manner. So we want to, you know, we want to cultivate those relationships. We want to look at them as models. And in the world, we have to be careful, you know, who we're looking at and what we're reading and what we're seeing and how we're also being in the world. I was thinking of a story that happened to me that I'm like, I have to share this. When we were in America, one of the many things I've done is I worked as an actuary. And I worked in the city, downtown, and I actually took the A train from Farakway, which is about the most disgusting train you could take, from Farakway to downtown Manhattan. And I worked in AIG. And I happened to have had a very, very respectable Irish Catholic boss, whose name happened to be Pat Riley, but he happened to have been a very respectable human being. And I worked there for basically a year, until I couldn't take it anymore. Working as an actuary is a very clean job for the most part. People dressed carefully, people in general spoke appropriately. It's not like advertising, it's pretty clean. And I'm sorry, was that?
My entire family's in advertising, I'm just saying.
I know, that's what you said.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Okay, it's true. Anyway, people were mostly appropriate, but I dressed like a tznius woman. I dressed always with tznius, I wore a shetel, whatever. And people were very, like, people knew, like, I was from. And one time I was in a meeting, and somebody else got very upset about something, numbers or something like that, you know. And he said, like, some sort of curse. I don't even remember what he said. He said something very strong, and it was not an appropriate word. And afterwards, my immediate boss came over to me, and he apologized to me. And he said, I'm really sorry you had to hear that. And to me, this happened a long time ago, and I took it as such a beautiful story because it said, you clearly are a person who behaves in a certain way, dresses in a certain way, acts in a certain way, and therefore people around you should behave in a certain way. And I really was like, to me, I felt like, again, that like stuck with me because it was like, it kind of like made me feel like, you know, people like, when you are a certain way, people want to behave a certain way around you. So I think it's not easy. I think it's really a matter of sensitivity. I think it's really a matter of, you know, staying connected both, you know, with learning and both to your, like, internal, you know, sense of self and your own sense of dignity, having good models, having good friends, you know, being careful about, you know, what you look at, what you read, what you see, what you pay attention to, and really, like, you know, trying to hold on to sensitivity in a world that is really, 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 really not dignified.
I'll just share very quickly one quote. I saw this quote a bit ago. I took a screenshot of it because I loved it. May we stop seeing ourselves through the eyes of people that never saw us. I thought that was a really powerful quote. I think a lot of us do that, right? There are people that don't see us. They're in our lives. They don't see us. They don't see us. They don't see through to who we are. And those people communicated messages to us. And very often we've adopted their eyes in the way that we see ourselves. And if we're acting in an undignified fashion, perhaps we're acting out a vision that doesn't belong to us. And it would be interesting to take a step back and to think, who were the people in your life that were there but never saw you and who let you know that you were less than and who let you know in very subtle ways that you were something to be used or something that existed only to serve them? It's not an easy question to answer. We all had people like that. And those people told us things about ourselves that weren't true. And so very often we're acting out somebody else's story. And a real part of growth is learning to narrate your own story and to be comfortable in your own skin and to let go of other people's narratives as you are thinking about who you want to be. And we all have those narratives. We have to, because we were very little, so we didn't know how to develop our own narratives. So we adopted other people's narratives. But those people, they were people that loved you, those were amazing narratives, probably really empowering narratives. And if you can feel it inside of you, right? Like if you think about the people that gave you those really positive affirmations about yourself in your life and they told you, you are worthy and you are amazing and you're going to do amazing things and I'm just so excited to be a witness and a companion and a partner on your journey. Those people, when you feel them inside of you, if you could just like raise them up for a second, there's a sense of warmth and a sense of connection that you feel to yourself, a real sense of belonging. And then there are people that never saw you. And those were maybe some toxic relationships that you've been in. Maybe friends, maybe even relatives. And because we're little and we take in those narratives, we say, they must be true. Right? And we always act out our inner negative beliefs. We have to, because it has to come up through us in order to release it. So we all have to go through this period of behaving in an undignified way so that as it comes up from inside of us and we're behaving that way, it also touches us and we go, ugh, that doesn't feel very good. Right? And maybe we keep doing it over and over again because the narrative is so deeply embedded inside of us and it takes time for it to come out. And sometimes it could take a year and sometimes it could take 10 years and sometimes it could take 50 years. And it takes time for people to be able to let go of that part of themselves that's no longer working for them. And so one thing I think just to leave you off with is, if you do find yourself struggling in the area of dignity, which I imagine we all will, and you can remember how good it feels right now to act in a dignified fashion, ask yourself which narration is the one you want to have as the voiceover of your own life. Ask yourself whose voice you were acting out to begin with. And maybe it's time to put on new glasses.
I think for me personally, one of my biggest takeaways from tonight was actually a theme that keeps coming up in Mrs. Berg's answers, which is this idea of your ability to tap into your dignity impacts your surroundings. It impacts people around you. And I think we've talked about this in class, but again, that some people are a thermometer and some people are a thermostat. Right? Some people read the temperature in the room and adjust themselves accordingly. And some people set the temperature in the room and the room adjusts itself
to reflect that temperature. And a great hack, just a great practical hack, is surround yourselves with people who are thermostats that set your room to the setting that you want to be comfortable in, that you want to live in. I mean, to be surrounded by certain language, certain values, certain beliefs or patterns, and fool yourself that you'll be able to claw your way out of that thinking 24/7 is a little ambitious, and frankly, it's just a little tiring, right? It's much, much more pleasant to go through life being carried in the direction that you want to be carried by those around you. I'm actually going to bow out gracefully at this point, and Rabbi Fixer is going to take over. But we really want to hear from you. I mean, this room is full of thermostats. You are the DIF winners of this year, and that's not STEM. I think you all have what to gain from each other, and all have what to gain from your own experience. I always say we don't grow from an experience; we grow from reflecting upon an experience. Right? You could go through something and not grow through it unless you stop and reflect on it. So we're gonna take this opportunity to really just reflect on whatever it was that you experienced, and please take videos and some.